Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, or should I say happy Easter? I am working towards a PhD, God willing, if it doesn't break me first. It's Easter. I have to go for it. I have to draw a correlation today between my life as a doctor, your life as an ardent health enthusiast, or as someone who suffers from sickness. Little things, big things, diseases, something as simple as digestive problems. You who listen to the show run the gamut from the very sick to the very healthy. And yesterday was Good Friday, and today is Holy Saturday, and tomorrow is the resurrection. And that has huge meaning to me. And I got to tell you, I didn't ask for it to have huge meaning in my life. I evolved to it. I was raised Roman Catholic, St. Robert Bellarmine in New York City. And I received my communion. I remember studying for weeks so I could be an altar boy. I remember in the sixth grade, I was 12, receiving the Holy Confirmation from the bishop. The bishop came to the parish. That's the way it was done in the 60s, early 70s. The bishop came to the parish, and on that day, you received your confirmation. But you didn't understand it, of course. You were 10 or 11. You were much more concerned about playing basketball and get out of the church as soon as possible so you could play with your friends. That's normal. I don't know if it's healthy, but it's the way everybody was. Then in college, I went to Jesuit schools, Fordham University. I met the Jesuits. Jesuits are Catholic, if you're not familiar with them. You should be if you're not. The Jesuits were founded by Ignatius Loyola. That is a story I won't get into today, but Ignatius Loyola, the life of Ignatius Loyola and his impact on the Catholic Church is a story. And the Jesuits today are the intellectuals of the Catholic Church. Fordham University, where I went, I was educated by Jesuits. Georgetown, run by the Jesuits. They're the intelligentsia of the Catholic Church. Wonderful, wonderful scholars. These men live for knowledge. I had the privilege of studying at Jesuit schools. Being born again, saying you're a born-again Christian, you see, isn't about being born into the Catholic Church. You're told as a child what your religion is, and you're identified as that, and then you go to schools that intensify your understanding. You don't make the choice for yourself. Being born again is something that happens. It happened to me, and that's a story I think is too personal. I'm not going to air that story, but I can tell you my conversion as born again, as a born again Christian, was born out of my experiences with my patients. And the reason that happened, and what I suggest that you understand, is it, if you're seriously in the game of helping others find ways for their bodies to heal themselves, if you're in the healing ministry, so to speak, you have to grapple and understand what the meaning of suffering is, why we suffer. why you suffer, why you act like you don't suffer, but you really do. If you're a doctor, you have to have an understanding of why people suffer, because if you're a doctor worth your salt, your day is spent seeing all the things underneath the surface of people that cause them their suffering. And those things are always heavy. It's life. So if you don't have a perspective on suffering, you don't know where you're going as a doctor. You cannot function. It will break you. You will have a nervous breakdown, or you'll treat toenail fungus and things like whatever. You'll be lightweight in your practice. You won't take it on. You'll turn nutrition into something more for GQ and Vanity Fair than you will for working with people who are suffering. You have to understand it. You have to evolve a theology about suffering yourself. And this is where the life of Christ is so important. And this is where what we celebrate tomorrow becomes so important. This is what yesterday, Good Friday, the crucifixion. This is what the agony in the garden is so important to understand. So you can develop a theology about why you suffer. You don't heal. You walk in to your healthcare therapist, your doctor, your whoever, and you say, I am in pain. From I have a little symptom to a massive disease, I don't work, I'm debilitated, my life revolves around my suffering. And your doctor better have a theology about that. Oh, no, no, no. We don't have to care about that. Go to pain management if you want a perspective on why you suffer. You don't heal unless you can get to that place where you understand the virtue of your suffering. And I'll tell you right up front, I have a limitation to my understanding of that. I'll tell you something you might not understand. I can only be as good as how much I understand the virtue to suffering. Where I can no longer find the virtue, the potential virtue in someone's suffering, is where I can no longer call a healing, a blessing. They're both two sides of the same coin. And if you can't potentially understand the suffering as a stepping stone to a healing and therefore a blessing, if that's over your head, don't work with that person. And sometimes I can't. I can't understand sometimes why people have car accidents, surfboard accidents. One day they're young and healthy, the next day they can't walk. I don't understand that generally. That's the limit of my maturity. But I can understand a lot, truly understand a lot. Not on the air right now, on radio, on terrestrial radio, claiming that I understand a lot. I do understand a lot because I've paid those dues. Make no mistake about that. I've paid enough dues to look at enough bases to say there is a virtue to your suffering. Holistic medicine is supposed to be the methodology. It's supposed to be the functional practicum. The life of Christ is where holistic medicine really draws itself from. The life of Christ right to the resurrection is really, I want to call it the metaphor, but really, holistic medicine is the metaphor for the life of Christ. So consider the life of Christ. And although I'm not a theologian, I'm going to take this on because it's very close to me. I have to exist wrapping myself around why people have, well, I have a 36-year-old woman with ankylosing spondylitis. She will heal. With God's cooperation, she'll heal. I've matured enough to say that. I've lost enough hair to be able to say that. But she'll heal. Ankylosing spondylitis is a condition where your cartilage turns to bone. That is not pleasant. You asphyxiate to death. It is a nasty, painful, wretched disease. The devil lives in that disease. And this woman is going to heal. I have a woman with rheumatoid arthritis. And if she elects to apply herself to a healing, she will heal. So I've gotten close enough to people in pain to ask myself why they suffer. And on that basis, I will render you with perceptions today about the life of Christ as it inspires me as a doctor. So consider the life of Christ first and foremost, because he is born, and at an early age, he shows that he is prodigious. The stories about Christ as a boy in the temple, talking to the rabbis, I've heard them since I was 5 years old. And the rabbis are amazed at his prodigious knowledge and understanding. Certainly, you could see and certainly feel that he was a charismatic. There was a beam of light around him. He walked in the light, obviously. And at 13, at least, no threat. Just a cute kid. Brilliant. Prodigious. Grow up to be a good Pharisee. Grow up to be a good lawyer, a good scribe, a good accountant. Make the temple a lot of money. And yet, as an adult, we are told upon entry into the temple one day, he turns into a fit of rage. This is the Christ, our Christ, Jesus Christ. And he's flipping over tables and he's enraged because mercantile transaction was occurring in the temple, in the holy place. He certainly wasn't afraid to go home, boy. He certainly wasn't afraid to flip a table. He certainly wasn't afraid to express. And he certainly wasn't afraid to make an enemy. Even at times, if he lost his temper. You decide if that was the man in him at that moment or the God in him at that moment. Christ is God and Christ is man. Christ was purely God on this earth, in this incarnation. Then we would lose the teaching. I wouldn't relate as well. But he had part of him that was man and functioned like that. And that's where I can learn. So he's prodigious. He's a charismatic. He fascinates his audience. And at the same time, he draws a line in the sand. Don't anger him. There's substance there. He's just not another brilliant, pretty face. I mean, think about it. I'm a literalist. If I read it in the Bible, I take it literally. I don't think it's made up, imagined, exaggerated. That's my choice. You may have yours, that's mine. In any event, he's not just another pretty face. And as he matures, as he goes through puberty, as he becomes a man, he makes enemies. Now it's an issue of his own purification. And we witness his purification. Do not overlook. Don't overlook that 40 days out in the desert. You ever done a fast? 7-day fast? 14-day fast? 40 days. That's a long time. And I love that story where he meets Satan. Or is that the Satan inside him? In other words, is that his weakness that he's presented with as he purifies himself? The temptation, perhaps, that he could take his prodigious mind and his charisma and his connections and his ability to inspire and lead and devote his...